It's a dirty job. Somebody's got to do it. And tonight it's me. This is Politically Correct Week in Review, the call-in talk show here on KMUD. So there's a lot happening right now. I have been suspended in my regular writing of pithy blog because there's so much information I'm having a hard time digesting it. Not to mention that spring fever is taking hold. A gorgeous day here in southern Humboldt area. And the heat is on and lots of things to do outside and not worry about the rest of the world, which unfortunately is getting more and more worrisome. As we speak, I think the maneuvers to make an announcement of what Russia and the United States were discussing about their plans in Ukraine are going to be happening tomorrow. Gaza is under attack again. There's a team of paramedics missing for a week and journalists being killed and children being killed and a hospital bombed. It seems like no end in sight because the new policy from the hard right in Israel is to do what Trump was talking about, just get rid of everybody, not feed them, and create more chaos there. Meanwhile, the United States launched attacks on the Houthi people in Yemen. The crazy thing, the story breaking today about that is the editor of The Atlantic, Jeff Lee Goldberg, has reported that for some strange reason, and he was as perplexed as anybody else and wondered, it must be disinformation by some foreign power, it must be a hoax, it must be entrapment, something's going on. He was invited, allegedly, I mean, this is the story, that an account said to be Pete Hegseth's account from the Department of Defense, Secretary of Defense, inviting him to join a Signal app chat. The Signal is a open source encrypted communication channel that a lot of people use for allegedly private conversation. Of course, it's not private if you invite somebody to it. And so he was identified as JG in the chat and didn't say anything, but was listening to people he later came to know as representatives of, if not in fact, various key players in the intelligence community and national security community. And was privy to their planning for the Houthi attacks and was just, he was very surprised. And he didn't report all of what he heard because he's, you know, a good reporter and he knows that you're not supposed to divulge allegedly classified information. And the fact that it was on a unclassified source didn't deter him from that thing. But he did ask a lot of questions about from U.S. attorneys and so on about if this was a common thing, if this was a good thing. And the attorney's opinion was that it should never have happened. It should never happen. It's not a safe place to do that kind of stuff. And even more troubling was that one of the participants, what's Wall's role? I can't remember what his... one of the security guys, you know, one of Trump's people, had set his portion of the chat to disappear after a couple of weeks, which you can do apparently, which raises other legal questions in that all, you know, official government operations are supposed to be archived for the future, for the people to examine in the future and see what happened. Of course, the other puzzling and troubling thing about this is that it was completely optional attacks, and they say it's going to continue, but the account attributed to the vice president, and it sure sounded like the vice president was involved, was a little dubious about the timing. You know, should we really be doing this? You know, it's not on point with the messaging we're doing. Maybe we should take more time and massage the message a little before we go and attack this other country. The overwhelming consensus was that, in fact, we should do it now. And one of the big concerns was how we're going to get Europe to pay for it because the United States, it's protecting the basically shipping through the Suez Canal. The United States has about 3% of the traffic through the Suez Canal, and Europe does about 40% of traffic. So the fact is that they have more to lose by Houthi pirate attacks or terrorist attacks. Houthis, of course, have pledged to continuing doing this as long as Gaza is being attacked. Rather radical stance. But, you know, it's easy. If you stop attacking Gaza, they'll stop trying to aim at ships and stuff. Anyway, the consensus was we'll go ahead with it. But the idea that an account that the editor of the Atlantic account seems to think was Stephen Miller, anonymous, you know, SM on the chat. But the rhetoric certainly sounded like Stephen Miller, because he was going on about how we can leverage the Europeans to recompense us for the expense we will be using to do these attacks. And it's just following the business model, Trump's transactional business model of foreign policy. It's pretty disturbing stuff. The fast and loose with the institutions of government. And, of course, that's just one aspect. That's just the news today. I was focusing more on the Venezuelans being deported to El Salvador. And we already knew about El Salvador, the cruel and inhuman policies going on in El Salvador, where everybody's being rounded up for any suspicion of gang membership, into really horrific conditions in the so-called terrorist prisons. And so now that Trump has declared special powers with the Foreign Enemies Act that he can just round up people and send them away, more and more stories that we're hearing now because of lawsuits that are coming through, there's a long, long laundry list of stories of people getting rounded up inappropriately without cause, having to be released down the road by judges after their violent detention and humiliation and so on. And you know, the idea that there's no accountability to due process in this process is rather troubling. And of course, Trump was ordered by a judge to cease and desist while this is looked into. And the response was, well, the president of El Salvador, and echoed by Marco Rubio, was, oopsie, too late. We already sent those people away to never be seen again. And really at high risk, because there's no trafficking of, you know, no lawyers are available. There's no way to determine what's happening now, because they're in the custody of a foreign country and we have no standing jurisdiction to do anything, nor the willingness to, you know, in calmer times, you'd appeal to the embassy in that country and say, hey, you know, I've got a problem. This isn't not right. And embassy staff would come and take a look. But, you know, that's the embassy is at the beck and call of the administration. So that's not going to happen. The response to this, you know, Trump, again, with the kind of deflection moves that he does and outright lying, you know, when that whole thing about Musk not being in control of Doge, but no, he's really in control, but no, he's not in control for legal purposes, but he's in control because I say he's in control, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's happened with this Venezuelan situation, which the president, during his campaign and during his inauguration speech, repeatedly mentioned the alien, I can't remember the official title now, the archaic, seldom used authority to deport whoever you want, as long as you're at war with a foreign country, is the actual wording of there. But he repeatedly said he was going to do that, that it was going to be a thing, that we're going to use this thing. And, you know, God knows where he found that, because he's no historical scholar. He has no idea what he's talking about. I'm sure somebody fed him the line. And further, he has declared that he didn't have anything to do with signing the order, that it wasn't him. It happened in the night without him, and et cetera. But, you know, there's a document on file on the official government website that shows a presidential order with his signature. So any way you slice it, either he's outright lying and thinks it doesn't matter anymore, or somebody else is signing for him for these important and disturbing measures. We have a call coming in. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
I wanted to say thank you first and foremost for free speech formats. Folks, as was said at the beginning of the program, let's not digress into personal attacks or partisanship, express an opinion without being negatively verbose. That being said, what you're referring to, and it's interesting with the Alien and Sedition Act that it's being recalled the Alien and Enemies Act.
Right.
The Alien and Sedition Act.
Yeah.
And it was instituted by Hamilton. And what's not being parsed by a very milquetoast media is that it was instituted by Hamilton. And it's not just, and Hamilton specifically, the edict went to the fact that you could not criticize the federal government or any officers of the government. And if you did so, you'd be imprisoned. So guess who was imprisoned? Journalists.
Right.
And activists, right?
Right.
Right? 272 people. Well, Jefferson ghost wrote what's called the Kentucky Resolution. And I believe James Madison wrote another resolution. Jefferson, while at his time, was pretty much a modern-day Trump, bankrupt many times, overbuilt the government. He was a very bright man, as opposed to the current seat in the Oval. And this Kentucky resolution specifically pointed out the forfeiture of the right of free speech, and that any government that chose to diminish speech, especially when it was political, was a despot. And then when Jefferson became president, he not only repealed the Alien Sedition Act, he freed the 272 people who'd been imprisoned by Hamilton. On a today format, the co-director of an Academy Award-winning documentary, No Other Land, the Palestinian co-director. This is a Palestinian man who was videographing. He's a Palestinian living in the West Bank, and he was part of producing a film about settler attacks on Palestinians living in the West Bank. He was arrested by the Israeli IDF today, the co-director of that film. He was roughed up, blindfolded, and taken away. A Georgetown professor has now been seized because they couldn't take his Palestinian wife because she's an American citizen. These attacks on academia and on speech are going to increase.
Yeah.
Let's be honest with ourselves. This is horrific. And there were literally tens of thousands of people in the streets in Serbia this weekend. Tens of thousands.
Yeah, I was intrigued by the Serbian disruption in the parliament a few weeks ago where the smoke bombs were set off by the opposition.
Yeah. That was, and a fist fight.
Yeah.
And a fist fight there in parliament.
Yeah.
You know, that's happened in the United States Senate and House. There's been fist fights on the floor before.
Oh, yeah.
One guy got smacked with a cane in the late 1890s and was pretty severely injured. But again, this format, folks, the Republic isn't in jeopardy. It's at the end. We really, and I'm an Earth Firster. I'm a nonviolent peace activist. I marched on so many different occasions for different civil rights, whether it was ACT UP, protecting the forests, any place that was necessary. And let us not be quelled from our responsibility to stand together thoughtfully and peacefully and demonstrate. In fact, that Serbian demo was hit by the, they used that sound machine to disrupt the protest. They did that in Seattle, too. So, you know, don't, part of being in the demo is remaining calm when the opposing force comes at us. And what's strange now, just to take one last poke at the tiger, is that when we go out to demo, not only are we going to have people trying to infiltrate and disrupt our peaceful demo, because they do it every time. They're sponsored. They want to discredit a movement. But now we have, 1,600 insurrectionists and all of their fandom to deal with when we go out to protest. So it's not going to be pretty, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree that it seems like one of the tactics is to try to provoke what will become ugly, actually. That's the sense I'm getting. Especially, during this thing with the Venezuelans, the press secretary made the statement that a judge's order had no lawful basis. And the borders are, Tom Homan says, I don't care what judges think. I don't care what the left thinks. We're coming. Complete disregard for the institutions that that bind us, like it or not. I would never think that my sort of latent conservative patriotism would be provoked by, I don't consider myself that conservative or that patriotic in terms of what this country stands for, but I do have an abiding awareness of the original morality behind the idea of creating a nation of democracy and liberty. The idea is still there. We've never achieved it, but
again, Jefferson warned us against the rise of corporations as well as organized religions,
right?
And what I would say is, if we've been the lamp of freedom for the world, which we have the United States government, have an incredibly sordid past. But if we have any sense of decency moving forward, then it is our responsibility, in fact, it's dictated in the declaration that at a time when forces of darkness would assume control of said governance, it is the responsibility, nay, the duty of the citizens to rise up against said republic. But at the same time, that same document said that Congress should have forbade this sitting official in the Oval from even running for office.
Yeah.
So the mechanizations of power have been corrupted. We've been in constitutional crisis for decades. These folks are not only gaming the system, they fix the machine. And unless and until we as the mass of American citizens rise up against this authoritarianism, we'll continue to suffer one by one and then en masse until there's no reconciling this government. And there won't be free speech anymore. It's already being quelled.
Great.
It has been since the mid-90s when we talked about PC this and PC that.
Yeah, there's been a notion that this is not the time to go to the courts, that there's an emergency and we have to deal with this thing. And so I can't remember who. Somebody made the point that even during the same sort of mechanism used to inter the Japanese during World War II, even during wartime, actually declared war with troops on the ground in Europe and in Asia, that there was a whole handful, slew of legal proceedings that were going on challenging this. They didn't all come out in a good way, but the mechanism of challenge was still there. And, if we lose the ability to challenge something in court, as it seems Trump really would like to see, I don't know what's going to happen next because Congress seems to be kind of lame. You'd think that would be the next call is that, okay, our institutions are failing us, 2 out of 3. What's next,
Unfortunately, this is, again, a chief executive who didn't deign to put his hand on a Bible to swear to protect against enemies from within and without the country.
Right.
The enemy is within the government. We need to be honest with ourselves and recognize that. The enemy is the government right now.
Yeah.
The federal government is our enemy. My fear is that what's happening will result in someone always makes a dumb mistake that puts the dominoes over. I would loathe to see what I would equate as shield-on-shield violence when people who are representing different aspects of quote-unquote law enforcement, as it's nominally known as anymore, might be asked to take a view that opposes their moral and virtuous understanding of their responsibility, and yet we might see different types of indoctrinated groups, cops, National Guard, federal troops, in opposition to each other. This is cuckoo.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
no.
And,
it's,
and as well, have we not? Have we not through the through throwing Ukraine into the oven? Have we not now encouraged another? What is it? Europe wants to spend almost $800 billion on defenses. Who's laughing?
Yeah,
the armaments companies, kids. Mm-hmm. We got to knock this stuff off.
Yeah. Hey, I thank you for your call. It's good points, and you know, as you say, God forbid, shield on shield violence. I mean, it seems like that would be the desired outcome of the procedures that are going now. It seems like throwing chaos into the mix would sort of assure the
absolutely
takeover that is being looked at. Yeah,
absolutely. Keep undermining the system until the system has nothing left to coordinate or to be effective. And it's just a gosh darn shame. And it's never been a democracy. And again, because of the corporations. And here we are. So, folks, keep your thinking caps on. And if you go out in the street, link arms with the person standing next to you. And do not stop walking. Just keep walking with a smile on your face and sing. People who oppose protests can't stand when we sing.
Or if you're a clown.
clowns tend to get beat up. But ask Wavy Gravy.
Yeah, right.
Sing.
Okay, sing. Great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you for the format.
I'm going to quote Thomas Paine here. Thomas Paine, we got a caller come in a minute. Let me just get a paragraph out here. Thomas Paine, of course, wrote the pamphlet Common Sense before the Revolutionary War, before the Declaration of Independence, I believe, making the statements in favor of breaking away from Britain. He said, quote, "Let a crown be placed thereon by which the world may know that so far as we approve of monarchy, that in America the law is king, for and as in absolute governments, the king is law. So in free countries, the law ought to be king and there ought to be no other." And, you know, it wasn't the vacuum of creating a new country. There was no vacuum. We based our laws and law and order on British law and order, which was based on older models of law and order. And the common law, you know, was based on morality, doing the right thing at the right time. And I'll leave it at that with the next caller.
So the caller didn't want to go on the air.
Oh, well, what about free speech?
I just gave you – they're afraid. You know how it is. So they wanted to – they'd like you to do a feedback about what AOC and Bernie Sanders are doing.
Oh, yeah. I think they're doing what the rest of Congress should be doing. They're taking it to the streets. They're taking it to the people, you know, the final arbiter of what this country is – designed to be, or the people, right? And so the representative government, I mean, you know, Donald Trump's opinion is that, and he has stated so in a really ranting truth, so-called, that he on his social media site, talking about, you know, the judge, the discredited judge who was never elected by overwhelming blah, blah, blah. And he goes on and states all his bona fides of why he's the supreme. And the judge is not. And therefore, you know, I'm a thing. And totally disregarding the fact that, you know, representative government, you're representing the people. You're not elected to do your bidding. You're supposed to be doing things in the interest of people that you represent. It's a complicated thing, I'm sure. Bernie Sanders and AOC are saying the right things. Unfortunately, they're sort of singing to the choir there. The people that are cheering them on already know all the stuff they're saying. You know, they could probably do the same thing elsewhere. but the messaging they're doing is completely appropriate. You know, and I just was reading something to say that the through history, the turning point of revolution, you know, when revolutions have happened in the past, and I'm on the fence about revolutions. I don't think revolutions have ever turned out really well, but they definitely have changed things. It's turning out well is up to the future generations, I guess, but to disrupt and uproot established authority and governments, revolutions can do that. But apparently the historical fact is that it takes about 3.5% of the population to be in uprising, to be actively revolutionary. And at that point, things kind of click over and, you know, you can't stop it at that point. Things are happening. And I guess that's sort of the goal, that, you know, in sort of a limited revolutionary way that AOC and Bernie are out there rabble-rousing in a way to take back the country in a way that is progressive and reasonable. Both of them agree that change is needed, that we're not done, you know, things need to happen and that are different, but they should be done on behalf of people and people's needs, and that the current direction of the government is not going that way. So last time on the show, I mentioned, because he'd been in the news again recently, a Yale historian, Timothy Snyder. And I mentioned the name of his book, and I could not recall any details because I read it when it came out or shortly after it came out during the first Trump regime. And a little book – it's a cute little book because it's got evokes this old-timey letterpress look, and it's a tiny little – he calls it a pamphlet, the kind of thing you raise in your hand and shake at a crowd, you know, like the little red book of Mao. But it's called On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. And I thought, since I'm here alone and people aren't calling in, I would go through this a little bit. He basically breaks down lessons from history about how to avoid tyranny. And number one is an important one. Do not obey in advance. The directive to not obey in advance. And, you know, when we see somebody call in who's afraid to go on the air, I think that sort of cuts to the chase there, that being afraid to express yourself is obeying in advance. Anticipatory obedience is a political tragedy is what he opens that chapter in. Perhaps rulers did not initially know that citizens were willing to compromise this value or that principle. Perhaps a new regime did not at first have the direct means of influencing citizens one way or another. Then he goes on to the history of the German Reich and how they used that to proceed, you know, that you make people afraid, you make them so afraid that they do things that you want them to do without even being asked. And the second thing that he brings up is related to the conversation we were just having is, where is it? The second thing, defend institutions. You know, I mentioned this a minute ago, that institutions are the thing that we rely on to have civil order, the thing that we rely on to go about our business and be secure in our papers and persons and to not be afraid of being swept away or incarcerated for no good reason, or all the things that you can count on, you know, being educated and being fed and going to the grocery store and going to the bank and all those institutions that we rely on daily. It is the institutions that help us preserve decency, and they need our help as well. Do not speak of our institutions unless you make them yours by acting on their behalf. Institutions do not protect themselves. Of course, we can go – Kema falls into this too. They fall one after the other unless each is defended from the beginning. So choose an institution you care about, a court, a newspaper, a law, a labor union, and take its side. And it goes on again and talks about there's a lot of references to Nazi Germany in here because it's such an example of what had happened. Number three is beware the one-party state, and that's becoming pretty evident, the way that's a danger. Number four is take responsibility for the face of the world. Underlined a quote here. Does the history of tyranny apply to the United States? Certainly the Americans who spoke of eternal vigilance would have thought so. The logic of the system they devised was to mitigate the consequences of our real imperfections, not to celebrate our imaginary perfection. So making America great again, you could make the argument very easily that America was never great. And so making it again is inapplicable. Remember professional ethics. This came up this week in the news. There was a high-powered law firm, I think in Virginia, I can't remember, that was threatened by Trump that you better do this or this is going to happen. And I can't remember the details now, but I heard a little analysis about it and indicated, David Brooks, the conservative New York Times editorialist, so that he completely understood, and of course from his terms, he could completely understand that fiscal responsibility of the law firm took precedent over morality, basically, and duty to the morality of institutions and the state. In other words, I will be cowed by Donald Trump's actions and do what he says so that he does not hurt me. And that's like denying your ethics. And when legal authorities start denying ethics, we're in big trouble. Okay, caller. We got a caller.
Hi, Josh.
Hi.
What I wanted to see, I was trying to figure out why, what's going on with Trump. And so I was online and watched a video with Steve Bannon in it. And Steve Bannon, in my mind, just without knowing anything, I've always heard of him or considered him to be like full-on evil, right-wing strategist or whatever, right, kind of?
Mm-hmm.
He's really intelligent. Anyways, I heard his interview, and I was like going, man, I pretty much agree with almost everything this guy is saying, and he totally believes in Trump.
Yeah.
But he does say that Trump basically is kind of, he's got, multiple people, some of them being the big tech companies that used to be more leaning liberal, right, just an administration ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they saw the writing on the wall, I won't go on and on. But essentially, just wanted to say his take on it was that Trump has these like tech billionaires around him, and he listens to everyone and makes his mind up. But so I think Steve Bannon's ilk, which is basically like they're nationalists, but they're for the lower class. They're like, they don't want the rich to be like completely in control of everything.
Well, that's so interesting, seeing this.
Yeah, it does. But I'll just say one thing he said, and I'll shout this out to any conservatives out there, Republicans. One of the things is he's like, Trump is our peace president, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what they believe, and he has been. His first administration, he was more peaceful than some of the Democrats on either side of him. But what's going on, you can't ignore, what's happening to the government structure. He's coming at it, I think, from a business perspective. He's like, okay, what would you do if you're a businessman? And the other thing you touched on before, and I'll leave it at this, is that we're in extremely terrible economic condition, no matter what lies they're broadcasting on the mainstream media. Basically, we have the debt that's a bunch of bonds that are coming up for renewal, and they're either going to have to get refinanced at higher interest rates, and a lot of the countries and buyers out there, they don't believe in the dollar and our word anymore. So, the central banks have basically been pulling back. They're decelerating the money supply. And I'm just going to leave it there. Thanks, Josh.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, and we do have another caller.
I don't quite know how to put this. It's not that I'm afraid to come on, certainly, but I want to be very careful how I put things because I think words do matter very much. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about earlier about what you first came on with, about Jeff Goldberg from the editor of the Atlantic Monthly, mm-hmm. Getting in on what turns out to be a huge security breach. And it was hours later, and the president said that this was the first he'd heard of it. I don't know who told him. Right. He said he hadn't heard of it. And so what I'm wondering, one of the things, is where is he? Who is accountable? And somebody else was wondering, too, about the president and where he is. It seems like he can get away with doing anything. I mean,
or nothing.
Well, pardon. He's nothing. So I'm going to quit. I'm going to quit in a minute, so okay. You can respond. But I want to make sure I sort of get this in before I forget. We hear, and I heard the person before the last person saying, you know, we want to do everything peacefully and orderly. And what I'm wondering is, how can we watch this happening, this dismantling of the government? How can we watch this, and are we going to get to a place where we're beat down and where we're weakened and we can't do anything?
The thing is, we have lived a charmed life in this country. We have not suffered in the way that the rest of the world has in a long time. You know, the Depression was terrible, of course, back in the 30s. I've heard it said that people who lived in the country, like many of us do around here, were not all that affected by the Depression because they had no high expectations of material life to begin with. It was always a economic, you know, economies of scale, you know, that the home was what you had and you ate what you could get. And that's the way it was for a lot
that's
of people
anyway.
It's only with this, industrial revolution that increased the American dreams, aspirations, where people had appliances in their homes and cars in their driveways and regular jobs and high-priced schools and so on, that suffering took a different turn for those people. But it's been a long time. It's been a generation or two since we've had deprivation on that scale. And people today, you know, younger people today have no idea what it was like back then when you had to go to the soup line or you're going to go hungry, you know. Let alone having your apartment bombed and your children killed in front of you. There's going to be a downturn of what happens here. And, you know, a lot of it is fluff. I mean, a lot of the predicted chaos and machinations of Trump's minions there is about news cycles and propaganda. And they're not competent. They're not doing the right things in the right ways. A lot of it's going to blow back, and they're not here forever. But they're trying to do damage that is lasting, and we'll see if they succeed. I mean, it's laughable. Some of the claims that have been claimed by Musk and then repeated by Trump as fact and reported on, you know, in various ways, things like the Social Security and the 300-year-old people getting paid and so on. And there's like a fundamental misunderstanding of what's going on in that agency because the people looking at and reporting to Musk and Trump don't know what's going on there because they're not institutionally ingrained into what the system is there, including the actual technical computer system, which is based on a rather archaic programming language that they have no idea how to operate. And so WizKid state-of-the-art guys with their laptops and their latest programming languages don't know what they're looking at and misinterpret stuff. And, you know, that's a heck of a way to run a country. You know, the latest thing about the post office being impaired. Post office is one of the few operations mentioned in the Constitution as a thing that Congress has the power to do, you know. And if Congress doesn't come to their senses in terms of what the post office represents, free mail delivery every day, 6 days a week, to just about every address in the country. I mean, that of course that costs money. And of course, there's lots of reasons why they're not doing as well. but it's an essential service to people who don't have connectivity. You know, back before telephones, post office ruled the world, you know, in terms of getting supplies. You know, the Sears catalog was a thing because you could get just about anything from garden hose to houses delivered by train car to your homestead somewhere through the mail system. The road systems in the rural farm countries were based on package delivery with the post office. It's pivotal in the development of the country. One of the first institutions that we had before the country was formed, when Benjamin Franklin formed the first post office. So it's little things like that, you know, remembering the institutions I was just talking about. I think things will get worse before they get better, and there will be some suffering. I mean, I'm hearing stories locally about people getting outrageous Social Security checks delivered to their accounts and not knowing why. And some people thinking, well, maybe it's to entrap me if I use that money and they demand it and then I get accused of fraud because they sent me the wrong amount of money.
Does Timothy Snyder say anything about confusion and chaos? Because I have not read this particular book of his. A lot of this is going on. I mean, and I just want to backstep a couple.
Well, he does step back. He does say, believe in truth.
And what is the truth?
Well, in my estimation, I've had arguments with Charlie about this. He thinks truth is relative. I believe there are things that are true and there are things that are untrue. Things that are not true are not truth. I mean, it's pretty definitive in my mind.
And there are things such as old-fashioned biblical things like thou shalt not kill.
Well, that's just written word. That doesn't make it truth. I mean, it's, you know, it's,
well,
that's a moral code.
That wasn't a very good example.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I think that there is some, this is not truth. I don't want to use the word truth here. There is something in that. Probably a lot of the government agencies did have some people that sat and didn't put in a good eight hours a day.
Nobody denies that there's waste, fraud, and abuse in the government.
Right.
Yeah, of course, and there always has been. But one of the facts, one of the truths, is the size of government has not grown in proportion to the workload or population in a long time. You know, it's sort of this backlog of waste that is nowhere near as high as it could be. And of course, the most wasteful industry in the world is the Defense Department, right? But I will leave you with this. Number 18 in this little book is Be Calm When the Unthinkable Arrives. Modern tyranny is terror management. And it goes on. The one thing that came across earlier on in the administration, you know, way back a month ago, was calls for protests that were coming from unknown anonymous sources. And there was a little skepticism as to the validity or were these designed to have like a handful of people to show up and be dismissed or to incite counter protests or something. So I have not looked into this one yet. But to be aware that, every time you hear a call for a protest, it's not necessarily everybody all over the country is going to be doing it. I have heard of other actions planned. As Bernie and AOC are doing, they're doing the Fight Oligarchy tour, which is an unfortunate, you know, to use the word fight is always controversial. Are we fighting or are we resisting? I guess Kamala Harris was campaigning on fight, 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 and Trump likes to use those terms too, so get out the boxing gloves. Hey, okay, we do have a caller now.
I'm going to be really brief because
okay.
I was given the opportunity to speak quite a bit earlier.
Oh, yes, please do. Not double dip long.
real quick.
A few jimmies on top.
I did. Folks, are you going to be silent or are you going to be silenced?
Yeah.
Well, are you going to be wait till you can't speak before you speak? Three off-air calls. That leaves me, and that's all I got to say.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. In fact, I'll go off on a tangent here. After the assertions about what was going on with Ukraine were back and forth last time on the air, I did a deep dive. I had done a lot of research on the history of Ukraine, exerted sources here and there. And then I discovered somebody who had done a much more academic and rigorous version of that, which I do have posted on the Politically Correct Week in Review Facebook page. If you scroll down to a little cartoon, which is the eye candy to get you to read it, the cartoon says, it's not that difficult to understand a little kid standing in front of a tank, a Russian tank. It's not that difficult to understand. If you invade a nation to subjugate it, to take control of its natural resources, and because you fear its proximity could stir up the desire for democracy and liberty in your own people, you're the fascist. I came across this Google doc that is linked in this thing that dispels a lot of the myths or a lot of the news a lot of the things that we are taking in about Ukraine and the conflict there and how they align with Russian interests. And I have to say some of the stuff that was being banting about last time was just blatantly not true and inaccurate. And just for instance, the claim that, as Trump reiterates, that Zelensky started the war. Well, Zelensky, and this refers to the 2014 start of the war, not the 2022, back when the Donbass was under duress. Basically, Zelensky was elected four years after that conflict began. And shortly afterwards, there was a ceasefire, which was broken by Russia. So, I mean, just little things like that, you know, not knowing the history, kind of going broad stroke with history and how the U.S. caused the coup that overthrew the Ukrainian government. Well, there's a lot of detail there that is missing in that statement and how there was massive uprising to a blatantly corrupt and Russian-centric president of Ukraine. And it's a long story. But did we have another call? Yes. Okay. We have another call.
Hello. Yeah. You know, I noticed the glaring absence of the words climate change. You know, the loss to our natural habitat, the environment, our scientific, including medical sciences.
Yeah, that's becoming sort of the background.
In all of this discussion, everybody talks about the economy, and the wars, but, you know, he's going to reinstitute coal.
Mm-hmm.
The old growth forests are going to be liquidated.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, and another thing.
It's interesting that we don't hear that mentioned, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mentioned last time that Greenpeace was being hit with a slap suit, and in fact, they lost that suit. And it's not clear whether they're going to appeal it yet, because that's one of the tactics there, is to cost so much money and so much time to dissuade further action. And so that the pipeline folks that sued Greenpeace for being a responsible party for shutting down the pipeline and the protests that they had sort of support of, but were in no way the ringleaders of. The idea of a slap suit is to dissuade public participation in protests, for sure. And, you know, Trump says drill, 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 and drill, baby, drill. But, you know, the government doesn't drill oil. It's driven by market resources and market concerns. And so the oil company.
Yeah, but the government opens up places to drill.
Yeah, of course.
And sets up the policies that drive it.
Yeah, and of course, so, we're not
and, you know,
really
that, that's what's really disturbing, not hearing people talk about that.
Yeah, well, it seems
The New York Times interviewed six people about Trump.
Uh-huh.
And it was never mentioned.
Right.
They only mentioned the economy, and some of them were concerned about the rule of law and courts being disobeyed. Nobody mentioned the environment.
Okay, we're at the top of the hour, so let's take this up next time. Call in earlier, and we'll talk about it more, because it's true. It's become background noise, the whole climate thing.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Okay, folks, we're at the top.